The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Well, give Addie my love and tell her to take good care of you.
Well, you'll very likely see her soon yourself. I'll get a job out there. I'll send for you right away.
I don't doubt that, Bart. You'll get a job. Of course you will.
All aboard.
Didn't give us much time, did they? Goodbye, Lucy, dear.
Goodbye, darling.
In case I don't see you again, well, anything might happen. The train could jump off the track. If it should happen that I don't see you again, it's been very nice knowing you, Miss Breckenridge.
Bart, that's probably the prettiest speech you ever made. And in case I don't see you, well, for a little while, I just want to tell you, it's been lovely. Every bit of it. The whole 50 years. I'd sooner been your wife, Bart, than anyone else on earth.
Oh, thank you, Lucy.
On aboard!
Hey everyone, another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. Speaking of Loose Cannons things that are coming at you, you can go to our webpage, loosecannons.net, and find all our content there. Podcasts, writings, and videos, multiple. We've got three for all your Loose Cannons Year One, Akiru, and Kristen Stewart acting needs. Today we're going to be talking about 1937's Make Way for Tomorrow, directed by Leo McCarey. But before we do that, let's do this. Heralds and announcements.
All right.
Pete, hey, Trix, Patrick.
Yes, I would like to denounce Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl.
Wow.
This movie is just, it's way too in love with the Criterion Collection, and the main character is a narcissist who constantly, like, makes self-deprecating remarks about himself in order to seem self-deprecating, but it's very clear that he's, like, way too, has his head up his own ass. I don't know.
Classic Woody Allen.
But it is. It's definitely, and, yeah, it also throws some cancer in there and uses the Kuleshov effect to make the audience cry, and it's just, it's, I don't know. It's dumb and manipulative and twee, and I couldn't stand it. So, yeah.
I already wasn't going to see it, and now I'm not going to see it even more.
Yeah. I hadn't even heard of it, but now I'm definitely not going to see it.
It's coming to the theater this Friday, and I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to see it, but now I'm definitely not going to see it.
Yeah, I had free tickets to go, but then I was just like, I know it's going to be bad, so...
Wow, is declining it free.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing about free tickets is that they give out more than the theater can hold, so to make sure that you get a spot, you have to show up, like, an hour early, and I was like, is it worth showing up an hour early for this movie I know I'm not going to like? The answer was no.
Oh, I was kind of hoping that somebody else would see it so they could... join in, but I guess not. So I'm alone in
this way. Our worst of the year list will be more varied.
That's true, yeah,
for sure. About you, Basil?
I have a bunch of different options, but I'll go ahead and denounce.
Why don't you do
what?
I was gonna say you should do a Herald because I'm gonna do a denouncement, but let's go all negative.
Yep, just denounce everything. I could denounce the other Sundance favorite that has gotten sort of less than great reception now that it's actually come out, and denounce The Wolf Pack, which is a documentary about a bunch of kids who grew up in a small apartment in the Lower East Side in Manhattan, and are basically never allowed to leave, and all they do is sit around and watch movies all day, mostly Tarantino movies and other movies like that, and then shoot movies and reenact them, where they like write out the entire script of the movie, everyone gets a part, and then they memorize the lines and basically reenact the whole movie. And it's a really weird movie because it's a really horrible story, and it's really sad that this happened to these people, but it feels very exploitative watching it because a lot of it was obviously shot later and is sort of them reenacting their life as it used to be, because by the time you get to the end of the movie, you realize that a few of them have like moved out from that house and things have sort of changed. So obviously some of the earlier stuff, like, it just doesn't make sense that they shot that much. And I don't know, there's just a whole lot of sort of like moral issues with the whole creation of the movie that the documentarians basically ignore. And the movie eventually comes down on the side of like, you know, it sucks that their parents were like this, but at least they had movies to help them out along the way. And I'm like, I don't know, like, movies are pretty horrible at socializing. I know from personal experience, so it's not really a thing to like celebrate, you know. I was also sort of a shut-in and watched a lot of movies, and I really wish my life had been different than that in retrospect. But so to be like, yeah, like movies, you know, it's better than nothing, I don't know, it seems like a sad way to make a heartwarming story.
So it'll be winning an Academy Award this year, probably.
Yeah, for best documentary. Yep. I mentioned it in my Letterboxd review, but my friend Mitchell, who was on the podcast, we saw it together, and afterwards he was like, I think this might be the first documentary I've ever seen where I would be relieved to find out that it was fake, because then it would mean that they didn't like invade these people's sad lives and then make a movie about it.
Wow. Right. I have nothing to Howard or to announce.
Do you have anything positive?
So I guess we'll keep it negative.
I'm going to denounce Brief Encounter, which I'm, for multiple reasons, going to call the British In the Mood for Love.
Nice.
Because it's a weepy, fairly prudish romance about two married people who fall in love with each other, like passing by in the night, sort of. And it's also really, really well regarded on Letterboxd. I'll be the first person to give it a negative review of all of my friends. But yeah, I don't really understand what people like about it. Some people said they really like the main woman's acting, and I really liked her face at first, but then as she pretty much just did the same thing throughout most of the movie, I got pretty bored with it. And every time the movie did something that was kind of subtle, then it would explain the subtle thing it did, sometimes three or four times after that, in a way that I was like, well, I don't understand. There's no way you're not doing this intentionally. I don't understand what you're going for, where you're over-explaining everything. Like, a lot of it's narration, and sometimes the woman is literally narrating exactly what's happening on screen. Like, she's like, then we walked about halfway across this bridge, and he put his arm around me. And I'm like, I can see that. Why are you telling me that? The people behind me were crying, though, so they were obviously got really into it. The theater. But I didn't care about these people, and there were some really beautiful shots which kept me from absolutely hating it, but I thought it was a pretty poorly constructed movie.
So that's David Lean's Brief Encounter, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. The original.
Yeah.
Take that,
Based
Lean.
On the Neil Coward play.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Speaking of Criterion Collection and overrating... That's a Criterion Collection movie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, moving on.
Brilliant.
Making way for this movie, Make Way for Tomorrow.
Making way for Right Now. So, the plot of...
Vizelia's pick?
Yeah. The plot of Make Way for Tomorrow is quite simple in its construction. It's an elderly couple, Lucy and Bark Cooper, that have gone broke. They're losing their house and are about to get about to be homeless. So they call in their five kids, who are like middle-aged by now, and Lucy and Bark are like, I guess, in their 70s or 80s already. And they kind of ask the kids if, you know, what's the best thing to do, if one of them can take both of them to live at their house. And all the kids give different variants of no, we can only take one of you. And so Bark and Lucy are split up between two of the kids, and they stay at their houses and are equally miserable at both instances. And the movie kind of depicts how, you know, life has kind of passed them by, and as the title says, people are ready to for them to kind of leave already. And it's just the story of how they just don't fit in anymore with anyone and get one last meet at the end before they're separated again
forever,
pretty much.
Yeah, I'm indifferent to this movie. I can imagine myself rewatching it at some point and maybe liking it. But I came home, I saw Brief Encounter, and that was the only time that I had to watch this movie, was right after Brief Encounter, and I don't think I was in a particularly good mood, and I was not paying very good attention to this movie, and I only took like 7 or 8 notes, and normally when stuff like that happens, I put the movie aside and then I finish it later, but in this case I couldn't, so I just powered through. Probably not going to be that useful on this podcast.
I didn't like this movie. I felt kind of the same way you did, Ruben. I think maybe this movie is just not that interesting. I'll go as far as to say that. I felt like the acting was really hammy in a lot of places, and I also thought the writing was pretty hammy, and I didn't connect to these people the way the movie obviously wanted me to.
I really like this movie. I thought,
so does Orson Welles.
What?
So does Orson Welles.
And Jonathan Rosenbaum. It's one of his favorite Hollywood movies.
Orson Welles said it was the saddest movie of all time.
Wow. I don't know if I would go that far, but it's not surprising that to me that Patrick didn't like this, because he also didn't like Tokyo Story, which is, I've read, sort of a remake of this movie. Like, Ozu really liked this movie, and Tokyo Story was inspired by it.
Yeah, I could see that. I could totally see it.
Yeah, I was going to make a joke hoping that one of us fell asleep during this movie so we could keep that tradition alive.
I almost did.
Yeah. But yeah, I, for whatever reason, it worked for me. I liked it, even though it's pretty sad that they don't have a place with their family. I feel like the movie doesn't entirely vilify them for not being better, because there are parts where they are super insufferable and hard to be around. And as someone who, recently spent a pretty long time with my mother visiting, and experienced a lot of these same emotions of being sort of like feeling a weirdly kind of like the adult, where I had to like shuffle her around and explain how to do things like get on a bus and like do stuff like that. Feeling a little weird that I'm like kind of condescending to my mom, but then also feeling guilty about that because I'm like, she's my mom. Like, I should just put up with it. Like, what's the big deal? She put up with me for a whole lot of years when I was a kid, but... So I don't know. Maybe it's just because of the somewhat recent events in my life, but for whatever reason, this movie did sort of connect with me in that way.
Yeah, I love this movie. I think that it's definitely not perfect in any way. There's plenty of scenes that go on for too long, and there's definitely a lot of hammering home the point in a lot of them. But I really didn't care, because when it worked better than pretty much any movie I've ever watched. I feel like this movie made it, made me cry, I think, twice or three times. First time was when Lucy is on the phone with Bark during that bridge game. At that point, I think the movie really shot into focus for me. Up until then, I was kind of like, okay, right, well, you know, we'll see. If I don't really connect, I hadn't really connected to the characters yet, and I hadn't really, like, felt that into it until then. When that, once that happened, the way that scene is shot also, where you can kind of see the people in that bridge room reacting to her speech and it, like, affecting them in a certain way, I felt like I understood where this movie was really going. That it, like Basil said, it did not really want to vilify the other people, but it just really wasn't about the others as much as it was about Lucy and Bark's relationship. And I feel like when it really focused on that, zeroed in on that, and how, like, amongst all that, the bullshit that was happening to them, and, like, how they had kind of had a crappy life, that it's still possible to sort of go through life with dignity and find dignity in, like, those moments that you can share with someone. I feel like this movie really got at that better than pretty much anything I've seen. So, yeah, I feel I would rate it 5 stars. And I would probably not feel like you guys could probably come up with scenes that I would agree with that, yeah, that goes on for too long or is really hammy, but just really don't care. Like, this was as great as I was hoping it would be.
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, well, lots of people agree with you.
Yeah. I don't know, though. I would say that scene that you were talking about where she's on the phone with him was one of the scenes that I kind of got annoyed with, because I was like, all right, I get it. And then it kept cutting away to people's faces, and they were like, oh, we kind of feel bad. And I was like, I get it. They feel bad because she was being annoying earlier. I get it. I don't know. I felt like all of the scenes where I tried to do that was really, really on the nose. And, like, the writing was so ham-fisted in those scenes where it was just like, you know, oh, aren't we having a meaningful moment here all of a sudden? And I was just like, right, cool. Moving on then. I don't know. It didn't work for me. I guess it worked for you guys, but those scenes just didn't, like, I felt like they were way too obvious in what they were doing.
Yeah, like I said, I guess the obvious thing didn't worry me at all. I feel like also when you're talking about certain subjects, it's okay to be obvious. You know, I think death can be a really obvious point, and, like, being old and just about to die is also pretty obvious what's going on. So you're kind of allowed, like, a little more leeway with that, and being as direct as possible about it felt actually like the most honest way to approach it.
Yeah, I think especially because of the time period and what a lot of people were going through, it's sort of amazing that this movie got made, because, I mean, it's basically just about how the Depression's, like, fucking a lot of people over and they're losing their houses, and then, you know, that this, like, race for modernism, because, I mean, that was, like, a really big deal then, that's, like, they're trying to embrace new technologies, new stuff all the time, and, like, this is what's exciting and new, and, I don't know, to make a movie about the way that it's sad that things get brushed aside in that, like, race for new stuff is pretty cool, and not something that even really happens that much today, except for, like, in an old man kind of way. Like, this didn't feel like a get off my lawn movie, which I was really excited about, because I feel like it could have been like, these kids with their stupid... In fact, I feel like Tokyo Story is much more of that than this is. Like, I feel like there's a lot of legitimate moments where they're being super annoying, and, like, super, like, what's her name? Not Rhoda, but, George's wife, I forget, when she gets really mad at Lucy and is like, let me raise my own child, she's not wrong, because Lucy was, like, being pretty presumptuous by, like, keeping stuff from her and trying to like walk both sides of that line or whatever.
Yeah, I agree. So I
thought, this movie is made today. In fact, it was made last year. It's called Love is Strange.
Yeah, I was gonna ask because I didn't see that one.
John Lithgow, and it's almost the exact same movie.
Wow.
That was nice. I was gonna ask actually if that was because I didn't actually see it.
One,
I was like,
I thought that one was fine too.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is just a genre, not for me. Although I really liked Marissa Tomei in that, which would be one of my complaints that I feel somewhat comfortable about making in this movie, is that I didn't feel like the side actors were very good. That they, I don't feel like they held up their end like the main actors did.
Mm. Like the other son?
The
I wonder why they couldn't stay with him. Is it because he's like an eligible bachelor and he didn't want them cramping his style?
All the kids and their wives and their kids. Everyone except for the matriarch and patriarch, I thought, didn't bring it quite as much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like one of the interesting things about it is also, so this movie was made in 1937, right? So 8 years before the Second World War ended.
And
4 years before it started, so right when the greatest generation was right in its prime, I feel like it's really interesting that this movie basically, in a way, is saying, you know, you guys are a bunch of entitled brats that don't care about your elderly. And like, years later, it'll be, oh, the greatest generation, how great it really was. And kind of like...
And then their children will be entitled brats.
Yeah.
Exactly. So makes it all the more... You know, like the kind of theme that's endlessly repeatable. I feel like it's interesting because usually that people from that time are not depicted in this way as like entitled brats.
Right.
Maybe in Preston Sturges movies?
But also,
maybe.
Oh, sorry, go ahead, Patrick.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just the general like style of acting and writing from this time period, but something about it just, it rings really hollow to me when I hear it now. It just seems like people are like, I can't put my finger on exactly what it is. It's just like the like niceties and the way that they speak, where they're like making this kind of like goofy theatrical small talk, where they're like, can't even think of a good example now, but it's just the way that the scenes will start. The very first scene in the movie, actually, where the guy's coming in and they're like, he's like talking to his sister at the door. The way that scene played out for me, it was just kind of grating to hear the way that they talk to each other. Like, it didn't sound like real people talk to each other. It sounded like, hey, we made up these words for them to say at this door, and now they're reading them. And it never felt like, I don't know. I think it's just like a general, the way the acting style and the way the everything was at that point, like it hadn't evolved into like a real film acting style yet. It was still more like a theatrical acting style. And so I guess that in general bothers me about the movie.
Yeah, I guess I could see that, although it doesn't bother me at all. I've seen a lot of like melodramas and stuff from the 30s, and I'm almost always just like, yep, that's the movie. That's the way they write, I guess. Like, it doesn't, I don't know. There's some parts that I really like the way it's written, and also I feel like there's some things that the movie sneaks in that I thought were pretty interesting. Like there's a part when Lucy's trying to chastise Rhoda for like dating a lot of different guys, and the way she stands up for herself, it doesn't seem like the movie's like making fun of her. She's just like, hey, this is just what people do. Like, you see a lot of guys, then you can pick which one you like the best. Like, it's no big deal. And then Lucy's like, and she's like, come on, enough with the lecture.
Yeah.
And then she
right.
And I'm like,
I agree with that. And also, like, another scene where you're like, Basil was talking about them actually legitimately being annoying is when her son, Lucy's son, and his wife are about to leave for the theater, and she's just like sewing, and like they're about to leave, and she's like, oh, okay, yeah, well, I'll just be here, you know, sewing. And they're like, okay, are you sure you're okay? I'm like, yeah, you know, there's always the radio. Oh, wait, that's broken. And they're like, come on. And it's like, she is definitely being kind of a dick about it. Like,
yeah, I wrote down one of the lines she said because it made me laugh, where she's just like, this isn't the first time you left me alone. I'm like, what a rude, passive-aggressive thing to say to your children.
Totally, yeah. And I mean, it's also legitimate because she is lonely, you know? And mm-hmm. when people are lonely, they're not the nicest people to be around, obviously. And it's that much worse when you're old. Older, I think. Like, you don't get nicer mm-hmm. when you're older. So, I mean, that's, you know, just why? That wouldn't make sense. Yeah. But about the style of acting, I don't know. I mean, I guess Leo McCarey is mostly known as being like a comedy director, right? I mean, he made The Awful Truth. I think he made that the same year. Right. Right. I have never watched that, so I don't know how I would feel about it.
I think he won Best Director for it, right? Something like that.
That I can't tell you.
I remember reading some story. He won some kind of Oscar for it, and in his speech, he basically implied that they gave it to him for the wrong movie.
That's pretty funny. But, like, I mean, The Awful Truth of the Screwball Comedy, right? Which, I mean, mm-hmm. that's pretty much yeah. as Hollywood acting as it gets, right? That sort of genre.
The Awful Truth is basically His Girl Friday, except for Cary Grant is supposed to be the hero.
Yeah, yeah. No, but like just talking about like what Patrick was talking about, the style of acting, I think it was pretty much, I felt it was very purposefully more theatrical because it's also mostly about this old, you know, an older tradition of acting in a way. Like both Bark and Lucy and the actors playing them, they're not really like typical Hollywood style actors at all anymore. If they had a prime, it was like in the 1910s or whatever, which was not exactly a, you know,
yeah, like before
the advent of sound
even existed. Yeah.
And yeah, so in a way I feel like it fits that they're a little bit more like, I don't know, not as comfortable in front of the camera, say, you know, like there's a certain sense of discomfort you feel with those two. Where they're not really posing in the right ways, maybe, you know, it's not like they have like a great side to turn to the camera or whatever. And a lot of moments play out that are like where their faces are kind of low key. Like there's a couple of moments where the actress who plays Lucy, like she is shown as like her reaction shot is shown, and then like it's great. She's obviously a great actress. But a lot of the times they're just like, they're barely like, it's they're not exactly like stars in any way, and I think mm-hmm. it fits with the overall theme.
I was trying to find the last old movie that I really loved, like gave 4 stars or more to, and it was Adventures of Prince Ahmed from last year.
Nice.
Nice.
I don't watch that many old movies.
I think Basil should know.
Stella Dallas.
Yeah, Stella Dallas.
I really like that movie.
Which what year is that from?
35, so it's right around the same time. And it is also a melodrama, a big weepy.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, definitely should.
I'm trying to think if I like a melodrama from...
From this era.
When did Douglas Sirk start doing...
Most of what I like is musicals.
40s, right?
Yeah, Douglas Sirk is more the 40s. I think he was making stuff in the 30s, but, like, still in Germany, right?
Mm. I think so, yeah.
I don't even like Douglas Sirk that much.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, the last...
I mean, he's fine.
Yeah, the last older film that I can think of that I liked was Footlight Parade, which is from the early 30s.
33.
Mm. Yeah. The pre-code... era. Which I guess.
I think it's like right on the code cusp, actually. Yeah.
Code cusp.
Just slightly post-code, but.
Maybe it was the movie that finally
made them really start cracking down.
Or whatever. This is too far.
To come back to a thing that Basil said earlier, though, one thing that this movie definitely made me feel uncomfortable about is what you were saying about how, I don't know, how I act maybe towards older people from my family.
Uh-huh.
I mean, as ham-fisted as the dialogue sometimes was, it was also sometimes really uncomfortably spot on as to how, like, you try to kind of just sneak past
right. them
and like just give these like weird, like the weird dynamics that just develop when there's just a lot of both emotional and intellectual and whatever cultural difference between people that mm-hmm. is mostly enforced through age. Like there's like very little that we can kind of settle on sometimes. And I think like this movie starts off with that quote, with that long quote about there being like something about like there being a canyon.
Oh, yeah, it's very religious.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The whole opening, I was like, I thought it was gonna be a much more religious movie because like the opening credits, it's like over this like bright light shining through clouds with this like rich symphony music, and then it's like. Isn't that one of the commandments, like honor thy father and mother?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. Actually, I liked the thing that was before that when it says, mm-hmm. I actually found it here, there is no magic that will draw together in perfect understanding the aged and the young, which I thought was actually kind of cool. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. it's just, it's always going to be kind of shitty. Like, it's always going to be really complicated to bring together people who are like just bridged by that much time. And I felt like that already kind of gave a clue to that the fact that the movie was not really just about, oh, the younger generations are always shittier. It's just really tough to kind of coexist, you know, like it really is. And it's not like because there's plenty of scenes, I think, in this movie where their kids are acting like really entitled brats, like. Mm-hmm. Really ungrateful and like very, I don't know, like you keep thinking, if like the biggest wish of those two is to be together again, why can't one of them make this happen? Like, doesn't one of those kids love their parents enough to make that happen? But like, I guess it's just also, you know, you're not really in their headspace when you're younger, I guess, so it's easier to dismiss them.
Yeah, and I mean, I was going to say it doesn't vilify everyone, but there are certain people that it definitely vilifies almost completely. Like
One sister's husband who completely refuses for them to come over.
And
they're never coming over.
Right. what's her name? Cora, I think, the one that the dad is staying with. Yeah. Like, she's pretty much 100% awful, like, the whole time. She's really rude to his Jewish friend, and I was like, well, this is sort of, like, hinting at her just being an anti-Semite, because she's really rude to him for, like, no reason, from, like, the beginning to the end of the scene, and I was like, oh, I wonder if they're implying that, because, you know, Bark doesn't have a problem, and I was like, I wonder if they're implying that she's just a gross anti-Semite, and then... Also, there's the whole part where they, like, won't let him stay in their bed, but they don't want the doctor to know that, so then they, like, shuffle him into the bed right before the doctor gets there,
yeah.
which is pretty shitty. But then also that felt believable. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I've experienced this stuff in my life, but I just, for whatever reason, watching this movie, it didn't, like, turn those... things on, like, mm-hmm. make me remember them and make me care about these characters, so. I mean, it was awful when my grandfather got sick and he had to move to Birmingham so that my mom could take care of him, and basically it was, like, just my mom doing it, even though she has three siblings.
Right.
They were all busy or didn't have money or living across the world or going through a divorce or whatever. And, yeah, I, like, my mom was basically just gone for, like, a year. Like, she wasn't herself because it was, you know,
right.
so much stress and whatnot.
For sure.
But
I also,
the movie didn't make me feel the things that I felt when that was happening to me, really.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's how it goes. One thing that, like, super reminded me of my grandparents was the part where they're explaining their honeymoon to the guy who runs the hotel, and, like, they can't, like, both of them thinks is sure that the other one is wrong about which day they were doing it, and, like, the way they keep interrupting each other for this, like, totally inconsequential thing about whether it happened on Wednesday or Thursday. I've heard my grandparents, like, quibble over, like, tiny details about what day a thing happens so much that, like, my grandpa gets really irritated and then is just like, why don't you tell the story?
Yeah, when that scene was happening... Go ahead, Ruben.
Sorry. I was going to say, I would have really liked that scene if I hadn't already seen it in GG as the song I Remember It Well, which is one of my favorite scenes of all time.
Nice.
It's, like, almost the exact same scene, except for it's in song and it's funnier.
Right.
And it's got Marie Chevalier, who I loved.
He is pretty great.
I think
wrong with Marie Chevalier.
During that scene, I was kept thinking, what if that manager, the hotel manager guy who was talking to them at the time, is just, like, at some point just gets really annoyed and just leaves. And is like, whatever. I just came over for a nice chat, and now you guys can't shut up on what day you went on your stupid honeymoon.
Although, that's probably the thing that I liked best about the movie was kind of how sad it felt, like these people making time for them, like at the end of the movie in the hotel. Like it was like, oh, the whole movie we want the kids to like make time for them, and then when everybody does, like the hotel manager, and when the band starts playing a slow song so that they can still dance to it and stuff like that, I was like, this part now kind of feels a little patronizing and sad.
Yeah.
I'm like, there's really just no winning situation here.
Yep. Yeah, like the car salesman, like, suddenly being like, oh, you're right, I did just want to show off my car. Well, it was nice meeting you.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole sequence to me was super sad just because, like, I'm like, oh, this is kind of a bummer that this is the last time these people are going to see each other, and it's just like, for this thing where they're not even like really having new experiences, they're just like reliving the experiences that they had a really long time ago when they were young.
Yeah.
The part I did like was where the dad was on the phone with the daughter and he just like screams something that you can't hear at her. And I was like, that's pretty funny. Like he's just like telling his child off for being a dick to him.
Yep. I was like, I guess the joke of old people swearing a bunch is very old. It's not a new joke.
Old people swearing. Never not funny.
Yeah, I mean, although I kept thinking during that whole last, when they reenact their honeymoon kind of, that whole last sequence, I kept thinking, well, all these people are nice to them, but also they don't have to hang out with them. Like, they can hang out with them for a bit, and then that's it. And that's why they can basically be nice. It's easier to be nice to someone when you're not forced to hang out with them all the time, basically.
And when they're paying you to be in your club.
Yes.
Too.
Yeah. And I mean, the whole reason
that should have been the end of the movie instead of the train going away. Should have been like one of those spinning newspapers for an advertisement. Come to the so and so hotel. The old couple. Blah, blah, blah.
I mean, it's also the reason why that sales guy goes after them, too. It's like because he thinks that he can make some money off of them.
Yeah, yeah.
So, in a way, this movie stays pretty cynical about a lot of things while, you know, also trying to make it look kind of nice. It's, I think, probable to make a case that it actually isn't that as great as it might seem. And I mean, it does end with her, with him leaving on that stupid train, and then her going away, and then end. That's like, it's a really rough ending. Like, there's nothing nice about that. It's just so, like, kind of hopeless.
Did y'all think anything about the aesthetics, or was it just like the aesthetics were just in service of a story that you really liked?
I remember like the movie having lots of like visual cues that were pretty on the nose and obvious. When Bart goes into that shoe store, there's a pretty clear sign saying "Help Wanted" or whatever, and that being the reason why he goes there. And she kind of looks at it and then looks at the sign and then kind of goes away. Like I think McCary's mostly interesting in how people walk around within the rooms, like how they are arranged in them. Like there's kind of an interesting rhythm to that, and I think that probably, you know, stems from him being this kind of like actor's troupe director and less like a real visual artist, you know, like he can command some actors around in a good way.
Theatrical again.
Yeah.
You know who else is a theatrical director? Kenneth Lonergan, who I love.
Right, but he's I would say grasps the, you know, filmic style a little better, and has embraced.
He got to make films with 80 years of advancement.
It's true, yeah.
Roughly,
yeah, and he has all that time, you know, for, you know, actors to develop a style that is used to film being around, whereas at this point in time, I guess film is still relatively new for everybody.
Film is still relatively new. It's a lot younger than music or art.
It's true.
Or writing. Getting back, I didn't like, I found the aesthetics in this movie pretty boring, and I think it made it harder for me to pay attention to the plot because of the way that it looked and was shot. Just literally the same thing, because the way it looked and the way it was shot.
I will say the one actor that I felt kind of transcended that was his friend. I felt like he definitely transcended the acting. Like, I felt a lot of warmth, and I really liked the way that he played his scenes, and I thought he was, you know, I thought he was funny when he needed to be funny, and I thought he was really, like, warm and kind and just generally better than everybody else in the movie.
I thought his whole story was really sad, actually. You know, him talking about how, well, I got three kids or however many kids, and I'm not in contact with any of them anymore, and that's how I like it, and that's how they like it, and it's fine, and it's good, because I got my wife, and I got my violin, and I got my store, and blah, blah, blah. But, like, obviously, it's kind of a deeply sad story.
She makes really good soup.
Yeah.
You could say anything you want about me, but do not talk about my wife. Do not talk about her soup. He's like the proto version of the guy in the apartment. A mensch. It means a human being.
Yeah. New Leo McCary.
I would say the Jewish neighbor is a stock type, going back to theater even.
Definitely.
Because
yeah.
Jews are wacky. But spice up your play.
They sure are.
Little wacky neighbor.
Wacky.
Always ready for with some wacky financial advice.
Matzah, what is this?
I mean, to be honest,
what's a matzah?
That whole story that he comes up with, saying that, you know, Bark should ask this lawyer guy that if he can work for him and invite his wife over and, like, be housemaids together or whatever, it's not exactly sound like a great deal. Like, it really, like, it felt weird. Like, maybe usually in a movie like this, someone would come up with an idea that would, like, magically solve everything. And, like, maybe this is really the closest that this movie has to it. Is like, well, you could always try and get a job again at 70 or whatever and then clean some person's house And then maybe you could invite your wife over. She could also clean their house, but then you'd be together. You know, like, that's actually really not a super great option. But it's the closest thing to an option in this movie's universe. It's really bleak that way.
Yeah. I did think it was a really kind of like funny, sad joke when he's talking to, I can't remember who he's talking to, but he's talking about the guy that works at the bank who's taken his house, and he's like, well, now he's got my house, but I've got his girl. Ha ha ha. I was like,
no, it's the other way around, which makes the joke kind of sadder. He's telling the story about how he wanted the girl, and he's like, hey, and he's like, I got the girl, and he's like, but now he's got my house, so
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's,
guess you should have married that banker.
Yeah, it's a big bummer.
Even that one, yeah. Even when it's funny, the movie's a bummer.
Yeah.
What a bummer.
I like Bridge. Yeah. It's actually pretty easy. Like, everyone always, when they're trying to teach Bridge, tries to teach strategy as well. And it's like, no, teach the rules, let people play a couple hands, and then start teaching strategy once they've gotten the hang of playing it. But no, she's trying to teach strategy. Like, Bridge is basically Hearts. Like, when she says, I played a lot of Hearts, it's like basically the same thing, except for the trump changes. It's not always Hearts. And you're basically bidding on how many tricks you're going to get, as opposed to trying to not take Hearts or take all of them. That's it.
I feel like, remember the review to Friday the 13th that talked all about Strip Monopoly? I feel like Ruben should do his review just about Bridge and how the right way to teach Bridge, and like how she's totally not doing it the right way, and that's not even like a real
thing. I don't normally do reviews for podcast movies.
Well, I think she may be teaching like a more advanced class, like it may be in the intermediate class, not the beginner's class, because it seems like they've been there before, so this isn't the first week of the program. She's moving.
Bridge is a partner game, so what she's teaching you is how to communicate with your partner. Right. So like, always kind of giving something away.
How ironic that game is all about communication and communicating with your partner.
Oh, ho, ho, ho.
Yeah. No, but I actually think
a theme now. Let's tease it out, guys.
Yeah, as usual. No, I actually think that, like, if this movie was made later, like, in the 60s or whenever, or, like, I could totally picture someone, like, even, like, or someone more filmically inclined as a director, much more, like, of a film person than McCary maybe even was, film history person, would actually make this movie, like, an allegory about, like, the old breed of acting and like the old breed of filmmaking and whatever. But I don't really think that this movie is that, even though I guess, you know, we talked about it a little bit. This movie really seems to be just focused on, you know, the story of those of getting old and like how tough that is to keep understanding each other.
Everyone who likes it says that they like how human it is.
Yeah.
Talk about the themes or the aesthetics or anything.
Yeah, pretty much. It's really like bare bones in that way.
I know the feeling. That's how I feel about like 2 days, one night, for instance. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's better, but like I don't remember shots from 2 days, one night, personally. I don't think that's gonna like stick with me, the visuals.
I still remember. Well, there's one shot. I don't want to ruin it though, because that's a great movie, and I think everybody should see it. So, there's a shot I remember, but describing it will give away.
Only Ilya hasn't seen it on the podcast though.
Yep, I still have it.
Yeah, but I don't want to ruin it for our audience. You know, it's not that old a movie. and yeah.
Yeah, Michael. A couple other people.
Yeah. Whoever else?
Bill.
Adam. There's another Adam that listens to our podcast that sent us an email.
Oh, yeah.
Adam. I'm sorry, I can't remember your last name, other Adam, but...
Thanks for the compliments about Barry Lyndon. Speaking of...
Yes.
If you're enjoying the podcast, you should subscribe using your podcast listening service. You should go to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. Write something nice about our podcast, because the more 5 stars and more reviews we get, the more likely we're going to get featured, which would be great for our listenership. Is there anything else I normally say? No. I normally make a joke.
Here's where we usually talk about people sending us money.
We do have an email. What's the email, Patrick? Is it Loose Cannons Podcast?
Yes, loosecannonspodcast@gmail.com.
If you want to send us any comments or questions there, and of course you can comment directly on our website under any of the podcast pages.
That's right.
All right. Does anyone have anything else they want to say about Make Way for Tomorrow? All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.